Get road trip ready with a service checkup at your local Chevy dealer. They can save you time and money and get the job done right the first time, worry-free. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for current service specials or to schedule a test drive.
All right, it's time for our Tuesdays with Tom segment. Tom Skilling joins us every Tuesday this time. We're so glad he does, and it's sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems. Tom, we got a lot to ask you about with the Global Climate Summit going on, but how are you doing today?
Good, Anna. How are you? Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. Always great talking to you. A little cool start to the day today, but we'll get into our weather. It's a little sure. Nippy out there. I do want to get into the climate summit, the Global Climate Summit. Today, we're hearing that President Biden and other global leaders have committed to end deforestation. A lot going on there in Scotland. You see the celebrities gathering. And I just want to get, you know, they say this is one of the most meaningful international meetings of our lifetimes. I don't know if that's overstating it, Tom. Your perspective on what you see happening right now.
Well, it's an important issue. There's no question about it. And, the past year has certainly given us evidence of weather extremes. We've actually had that for quite a while. So no doubt about it, it's really important. And, you look around and you see the heat waves are getting hotter. The floods are getting more extreme. And on the other end of the spectrum, you get drought. Problem is, Anna, all weather on the planet is driven by differential heating, the fact that one area gets warmer than another. And when you introduce gases, which hold on to and re-radiate heat, you change the heat budget, and therefore that alters jet streams that, deliver our life-giving rains necessary for food production and, of course, water supplies. Look what's happening in the West with that drought. By most accounts, the first or second worst drought in the last 1,200 years. And by the way, people say, how do you come up with these numbers, or how do the scientists? Because we only have weather records going back to the late 1800s. Well, there's a whole branch of science known as paleoclimatology that looks at proxy indicators like ice cores, like tree rings, all kinds of things. And the way proxy indicators work is the way we put them to work all the time. We get up in the morning. We've been sleeping overnight. We look outside. The pavement's wet. And we say, hey, it's rained. Well, the fact the pavement is wet is a proxy indicator that it's rained, even though we didn't see the rain falling. And you can look at other indicators like that, and ice cores are among them. In fact, and it was interesting, I saw some pictures posted of one of the art galleries outside this Glasgow conference. Mm-hmm. And they have one photo of a bubble of air from 1765, taken from Antarctic ice. 1765 is widely believed to be the year the Industrial Revolution dawned, and it was at that point that, the amount of greenhouse gas was increased that was put in the atmosphere, and that's been associated with the warming that we've seen and the changes in weather patterns. And there's another, they have an ice core from Antarctica. This is what the scientists drill going down into the ice. And you can see in this ice core these little bubbles of air. And it's those bubbles that scientists extract to figure out what the carbon dioxide and other, components of the atmosphere were like hundreds of years ago. And those are called proxy indicators. And that's the way we go back before the instrument record and figure out what was going on with the planet's weather. So it's really interesting.
It is.
But yeah, it's very timely and very important. No question. We have more people on this planet today than ever before, and yet our climate is changing 10 times faster than anything that had been recorded since human history. And humans have walked the planet only about 200 to 300 years. We're a blip on the geologic time scale. And what we call civilization really has only been around 6,000 years. The last ice age ended 10 to 12,000 years ago. So, human civilization has evolved only in the latter portions of the conclusion of the last ice age. So it's interesting the impact it has because there are so many more of us these days.
Mm-hmm. And the human impact is something that, we talk about all the time. That is the front and center right now at the Climate Change Summit. They're saying that deforestation should end by the year 2030 to stop cutting down our forests and trees. And that, I believe that they're pretty close to some sort of an agreement on that, if they haven't already. Another step forward. Some of the other things they want to do, Tom, is they're cutting the emissions more seriously by 2030. They want to phase out coal power globally. Of course, you have to get the cooperation of nations like China to help with that, but that's one of the goals.
Yep. No question about it. We can't do it by ourselves. And China has emerged as the leading producer of greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases. So it's really interesting. You know, we can step in and make an impact, and it doesn't ruin the economies of the world. We have a perfect example of that in the Montreal Protocol, which was signed back in 1987 and went into effect in 1989. That was the international agreement that banned chlorofluorocarbon propellants in aerosol cans. One molecule of these chlorofluorocarbon propellants can destroy 100,000 molecules of ozone up in the stratospheric ozone layer that protects us from the ultraviolet. And, you know, it's interesting. We think of this atmosphere as being vast and endless and us as being a small contributor of gases and all. And how can we as mere humans impact the state of our atmosphere? But the fact is, if you look at the ozone layer that you hear talked about, it's a pretty thick layer up there at the altitude it occurs. But if you brought that ozone layer down to the ground level and exposed it to the air pressure we have here, it would only be 2 centimeters thick. That's less than an inch thick. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the fact that we can release chemicals that can mess that up shouldn't be hard to picture. You know, really, it can be done.
Absolutely. It is one of those things where you think that there's so much disagreement in amongst the population, but not amongst the scientific community. What you hear there is it's pretty much agreement. There may be some disagreement, but what is it you find when you meet with different climatologists and folks in the scientific community?
Oh, the agreement. Don Wobbles, who's a Nobel Prize winning scientist out of the University of Illinois, he's been instrumental in writing a lot of these climate. He's been one of the contributors, and there are thousands of scientists around the country and the world who contribute to these reports. And by the way, Anna, they're not compensated for that. Most of them work for agencies that allow them to work on work like that, but they don't receive compensation for their work, these scientists who contribute to these reports. And so the notion that they're doing it just to get grants doesn't work. It's not true. But you know, he always says this is the issue for which there's not another side. You know, we often approach issues and say we've got to tell both sides or more than one side of the story. But he always says, you know, this is pretty settled science, just like the sun rising in the morning and setting at night or gravity. We all pretty well agree on that kind of stuff. And the same is true of, climate and our ability to impact it. You know, another interesting point, people say, well, volcanoes put out more greenhouse gas a year. No, they don't. The fact is, humans, we produce 60 times the amount of carbon dioxide that's released by volcanoes every year, except in the most exceptional years. And past climate changes have occurred slowly over tens of thousands of years, and most of them have occurred because of the change of our orbit around the sun. The shape of our orbit changes over tens of thousands of years. We go from a near circular orbit to something that's more oblong. And what that does is it changes the amount of sunlight that comes into the atmosphere over periods of tens of thousands of years. And during that period, the ice ages develop and they recede. What we're doing now is not related to astronomy, our orbit around the sun. We're changing the atmospheric chemistry by putting gases in that hold onto and re-radiate heat. Mm-hmm. So that's why this is different. It's occurring faster, and it's occurring for a whole different reason than past climate changes have on the planet.
Tom Skilling, stand by for a second. You mentioned fascinating stuff about how they use other means, scientists do, of going back and collecting data on the climate. I want to ask you about written records and instrument records, because I know you always cite the Chicago fire that we go back to in Chicago, but I wonder globally how records are doing. Can you help us out with that in a second here?
Sure can.
Back with Tom Skilling on WGN. Fascinating talk about the global climate, convention going on, the summit, they would call it, in Glasgow. All the celebrities are there. I saw Leonardo DiCaprio was there today. The royals, the big CEO types, attracting a lot of attention. And it's good. It's good to have some conversations about this. I like that. Earlier, Tom, you mentioned that there are these sophisticated ways of collecting data going back years and years and years. You said tree rings and ice cores and examining that kind of information to find prehistoric climates. I wonder about the instrument records and the written records around the world. What kind of data is there on that?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Anna. A lot of the instrumentation, like the thermometer and the hygrometer and the barometer, these things that measure temperature, humidity, and air pressure, these are relatively recently developed. Like the thermometer was only developed by Galileo Galilei back in the late 1500s. And the barometer was developed by an Italian by the name of Torricelli to measure air pressure. So, you know, you go back to the Roman era or to the time of Christ, there were no weather instruments available then. So the way scientists have to go about figuring out what the climate was like back then is using proxy records. And that can be a whole variety of things. It can be geologic. They can be tree rings. They can be ice cores that tell us from bubbles of ice or air trapped in the ice from eons ago what the weather's like. And we've established a record that goes back, you know, millions of years on climate on the planet. It's the same way. You know, these are the same sort of indicators that have been used to determine that the continents drift and all. And the fact that, you know, there's signs that what is now Antarctica had tropical vegetation on it back when that landmass was in a different location on Earth. But it's drifted over time. Mm-hmm. So it's quite interesting. That's a whole science called paleoclimatology. And it's an interesting science that's used. Now, the instrument record in this country goes back, the full one, to about 1880. But there are some instrument records that go back, say in Europe, back into the mid-1700s. Hmm. So they have records that go back that far. And the satellites have really fully looked at the planet since it's widely regarded as the mid-60s, is the period of the satellite era. And that's when we were able to look at all the tropical ocean basins and see what the hurricanes have done and all that sort of thing. Ice measurement now. We have very precise ways to measure the amount of ice on the planet. That record goes back to the late 1970s. So those are more recent data. But on the other hand, the Navy and the military kept records on ice because they had submarines going under the Arctic ice pack back in the 1950s. And they've even constructed ocean temperatures from mariners' logs that have been kept back, back into the 1500s and 1600s as the early explorers fanned out across the oceans. So we're kind of like, we gather information from all different sources, mm-hmm. As we do now when we look at the current weather. We use aircraft, we use balloons, we use satellite readings, buoys. We're real data scavengers in this line of work.
And you've got a number of things, as you just said, that's really cool to keep it as accurate as possible. And we know here in the Midwest that that matters, especially when there's severe weather hitting. Give us a view of what we're looking at now, Tom. How does it look in the next 10 days or so?
Well, you know, we are in cool weather. We had a low of 32 last night at both the airports, and that's the first time we've been at freezing this season. First time we've been at freezing in the city proper since back on April 22nd. So it was the coolest morning in over 6 months this morning. And this week we'll stay in the 40s all week for daytime highs. By the weekend, we'll get into the 50s. It's the first time we've put multiple days of 40-degree high temperatures together since back in March. So this is the coolest week we've had in 7 months, and it feels like it when you go out there, Anna. There's no question. But there is a pattern change coming, and it'll warm us up quite dramatically over the weekend, but even more so early next week. There are signs that later next week it may turn cooler again, and there have even been a couple of models that show a weather system might produce some mixed precipitation around here late next week after what will have started as a very warm week. So it's an interesting time of the year. Things, you know, the pattern tends to be very transient, and temperatures bobble around some, and we'll see that in the next couple of weeks.
Sounds like it. No snow, I've heard you say. Nothing like that in the near-term forecast.
Not for us, but overnight they had 8 inches in parts of upper Michigan, and they had up to 4 inches in parts of northern lower Michigan. So the lake effect snow machine has turned on. About 6.5% of the lower 48 is covered by snow right now. And that's mainly north of us, but even more so in the high elevations out in the Rockies. And it's interesting because we only had 4.5% covered by snow a year ago, so we're running. But on the other hand, the Great Lakes, like Lake Michigan, is running about 7 degrees warmer than it did last year at this time because we've had a warm autumn up till now.
Yeah. Your colleague Bill Snyder was on with us yesterday, kind enough to join us. He said it's been a fascinating October, and he was talking exactly about that, Tom. It was good to hear from him.
Yes, indeed. It has been. You know who else I talked to is Rod Streamstra, who is writing a book. Everybody at WGN will remember Rod and his interactions with Bob Collins and everybody on the air. Rod is coming out with a book, and he's asked me to write a foreword on it. It's wonderful. I've seen an advanced copy of it. What a fascinating background. And you know, Rod was onto this climate change very early. I mean, he and I used to have discussions about it. And so I was telling him that, you know, I've come around on the issue.
Because you initially were not totally on board. Am I remembering that right?
No, that's absolutely right. No, my view on it has evolved. And part of the reason, Anna, is because I've seen the atmosphere doing things completely consistent with what the computer model said it was going to do. Uh-huh. And you know, so it's been an interesting evolution. But Raj, we used to kid each other and argue about this to some extent, but not any longer, I'll tell you that. Book is going to be fun, so that'll be coming out pretty soon.
Well, we'll have to preview that or something. Tom, we're out of time for today. It's fascinating getting your thoughts on all these things, and always appreciate you joining us, sir. Thank you.
Thanks, Anna. Good to talk to you. You take care.
We'll talk again next Tuesday. Tom Skilling, sponsored by Permaseal Basement Systems.